lot of irony involved. By the way, I misspoke here. We're gonna be talking about vocational education coming up here in our next segment. So in about another 20 minutes, stick around for that. What we want to talk about right now is inflation. What is causing inflation? And this is my opinion. I'll get our guest opinion here in a second. My opinion is it's economic policy. It's borrowing all this money that we're borrowing. We were warned going into all this that this was going to happen. And sure enough, we have inflation that reached a 30-year high in October, and it's not getting any better. And it doesn't seem to be transitory. It seems to be with us for a while and could very well get worse. So the question is, who is being hurt by this? Do you think the rich are being hurt? Do you think that the upper middle class is being hurt? I mean, you may feel it. You certainly are spending more filling up your tank with gas. You're spending more going to the restaurant, but, you know, you make a good income and you can deal with it. No, I mean, all these programs that are supposed to help the poor and the working poor, well, guess who's getting hurt the most by the inflation that's being caused by this? The poor and the working poor. Dr. Wayne Weingarten joins us, Pacific Research Institute, senior fellow there in business economics. It seems like pretty basic economics, does it not, to know that when prices go way up, especially the way they have recently, it's the people who can least afford it, the poor, who get hurt the most.
That's 100% correct. And not only do the poor get hurt the most, the poor don't have, you were talking about, you know, they filling up the gas tank doesn't harm upper middle income and upper income people as much, and that's absolutely true. But also when you have, you know, more income, you have assets, which are going to appreciate with inflation. So their income is better protected. Whereas when you're, you know, on a salary, your income, you know, often isn't protected against inflation. And so you're going to get hurt that way too.
Now, here's what I'm curious about here, because for those of us who've been following the policies of this administration, and I'm putting my politics out on my sleeve here, some of us believe that this is part of a great or an attempt at a great economic reset. Which is we're going to redistribute the wealth. We're going to take from the rich, we're going to give to the poor, and we're going to even the playing field. But at this point in time, it feels like the opposite is happening. The rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer. How is there any economic justice involved in this agenda?
Well, it's interesting. You're right. One, inflation is a great redistributor, and it redistributes away from lower income to upper income. If you look at the Build Back Better plan that was just passed through the House, that actually has, especially if you're living in New York or California, net tax cuts for the rich, which isn't being advertised, but some of the provisions they put in, specifically the state and local tax deduction, kind of increasing the cap on that, you actually, with all the provisions worked out, if you're upper income, you got a tax break from the Build Back Better program. So the rhetoric says we're going to redistribute from the rich to the poor. But in practice, that's not what that bill does. If you look at the inflation, and that is, you know, the debt is being monetized by the Fed, and that combination is harming lower income. So we're harming entrepreneurship, which is an important segue from the lower income to the middle class with all of these policies. So we're getting less entrepreneurship, less opportunity, and we're actually redistributing income towards larger businesses, which can handle inflation better, and towards upper income taxpayers. So you really have really perverse outcomes, and it's the exact opposite of the rhetoric. The actual impact is the opposite of the rhetoric that's coming out of D.C.
Well, you know, I'm glad you said rhetoric here, because I will give the devil its due. I believe that this administration knows exactly what it is they're doing. They may be trying to sell it, especially to the far left of the party in wealth redistribution. But I think the reality is, I think part of it is they really enjoy keeping a large amount of people as government dependent as they possibly can. And the best way to do that is not to make them richer. It's to make them poorer and more government dependent.
I also believe that there's a fundamentally different kind of view on how the economy works that's just wrong. I mean, in the world view of the government is essential for creating wealth, for creating innovation, for technology. I mean, they're taking credit for the vaccines that were created by the private sector. I mean, so you have this view that the government creates wealth, when it's in actuality entrepreneurship that creates wealth. It's individuals. It's 300 million Americans pursuing kind of their view of things, but, you know, their innovations, implementing their ideas. That's where prosperity comes from. And so what you have now is a model, and we've demonstrated in previous history that model doesn't work, but we're going back down that same path in this view that government creates wealth, and all the government can do is redistribute wealth, and when it redistributes wealth, it reduces wealth.
Okay. What do you see happening long-term with inflation? Do you buy into the idea that this is a temporary blip, or do you think that this is going to be a little bit more permanent than it's being advertised to us?
It's more permanent than being advertised. I mean, you may get, with the recent pullback in oil prices, you may get a slight kind of lower readings in the near term, simply because oil prices are so important towards inflation. So that's a little bit of a relief, but it depends on how long the oil prices stay low. Long term, you've had such a huge increase in the money supply, and the Federal Reserve continues to accommodate these huge increases in deficits and debt, which aren't going away. So long term, we have, until we fix that, we have this threat of inflation that's going to just keep growing and growing over time.
We're talking to Dr. Wayne Weingarten. He's an economist, senior fellow in business and economics at the Pacific Research Institute. You know, Dr. Weingarten, it kind of feels like we have sort of the perfect storm going on here. You've got, as it relates to inflation and maybe even stagflation in the not-too-distant future, you've got a shortage of workers, you've got supply chain issues, you've got rampant inflation. It's not just government policy, not that government policy is helping any of these things, but it's not just government policy. It's the COVID pandemic, the way we've reacted to the pandemic, and everything that goes along with it.
Yeah, well, I mean, the one thing we learned, and I guess we should have known this before, but apparently we didn't, is that the global economy is very complex, and it's not like you can just use a light switch to turn it back on. It's more like one of those complicated, you know, you're downstairs, you got to hit the buttons for the generator and do all sorts of things to prime the pump and get things, you know, back running again. And so we're learning that the hard way, that, you know, if you look at all of the choke points in the supply chain, that's what happens when you shut down the global economy. And so we're slowly working through this. But now when you have policies that discourage people from going back to work, that's going to accentuate truck driver shortages. And so even if we can get through the bottleneck at the port, then we got to get through the bottlenecks of a shortage of truck drivers. And if we can get past that, especially in California, where you have all sorts of crazy regulations, you have a lack of warehousing space. So there's all of these just very kind of intricate details to the supply chain that we've never had to pay attention to, that, you know, government interference, government regulations are making it more difficult to be flexible to respond to kind of those choke points. And so that creates price pressures, obviously creates shortages. And it reduces kind of our welfare because, you know, if you go back to Thanksgiving, right, the turkey dinner was more expensive. You know, that part would obviously was the overall inflation, but the shortages from the supply chain issues was part of the problem as well.
Yeah. In a perfect world, in a perfect free market system, what would we be doing right now to straighten out the supply chain, to take the pressure off inflation? What are some of the things we should be doing?
What we should be doing is talk about reducing regulations on where we can store containers so that you actually can get all these containers that are stuck at the port that you can't move. So you actually have workers sitting at the port who can't actually move the containers because you can't get the containers out of there. So we need to reduce those regulations so that you can actually get kind of more space. We need to reduce the restrictions, especially like on the gig economy, where you have the PRO Act in D.C. and AB5 in California, which is making it difficult for the trucking industry to operate because they're trying to redefine and the government's definition of what a worker should be as opposed to how the industry actually works. And so that actually is exacerbating shortages. And across the economy, you know, when you talk about occupational licensing regulations, didn't exactly get to the supply chain issues, but we have all of these, you know, thousands of hours of training to become a hairdresser. So you have these types of obstacles that make it more difficult for people to actually, you know, you could be skilled at hairdressing, but you don't have the time or the money to do 1,000 hours of training, so you can't get those people back to work. So, you know, all of these types of unnecessary regulations that make it more costly for people to either pursue entrepreneurship or to pursue work in a way that fits their lifestyle, that makes the adjustment through kind of these shortages that the pandemic shutdown created more difficult. And so in the perfect free market economy, we might still have these bumps and kind of obstacles to get through, but we'd be more flexible and people would be able to respond to listen to kind of where the opportunities are and respond to those more quickly and more efficiently.
Okay, I'd save this question for last because it's the one that scares me the most. How bad do you think this can get? How bad before we start to turn it around in your estimation based on the path we're on right now?
Based on the path we're on right now, I think you use the dreaded word stagflation, and I think that's the worst case scenario. And the probability of that is growing, and I think that's really what's scary. You have the Fed has accommodated too much inflation, and so we have that threat constantly occurring. When you have a very contractionary fiscal policy connected to that, and that's what's happening right now, that creates the risk of stagflation, and that can be very, very scary and very damaging to the economy.
Yeah, I can. All right. Dr. Weingarten, thanks for your time today. Good to hear from you, sir. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Have a great one.
You too. Dr. Wayne Weingarten, economist, senior fellow in business and economics at the Pacific Research Institute. All right. Aaron Valdez, Texas Public Policy Foundation. I'm a big fan. My dad was in vocational education. He understood, maybe because he was a C student in college, he understood that four-year universities are not for everybody. We'll talk more about it next here on the Jimmy Baird Show, AM 950 KPRC.